Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, who's also Fine Gael TD for Meath East, is here. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks for coming in. I want to start with your reaction to the case of Natasha O'Brien, who people will have heard about yesterday. Natasha was the victim of an unprovoked attack. Her attacker, Cathal Crotty, was given a fully suspended sentence this week. Now, we know from what Natasha has said, both in court and after that verdict, that she feels justice wasn't done. She said there was no true regard given for the seriousness of his violent crimes, nor the lifelong trauma that she is now forced to suffer. What do you have to say about that and to her today?
Well, firstly, if I could just acknowledge Natasha and what she has gone through, and the fact that she has come forward and spoken so bravely and so openly about what happened to her, and in particular the impact that it's had on her life and potentially will have on the rest of her life. It is so important that victims of violence come forward and that they do take the steps that she has taken to make sure that those who are responsible are held accountable. You'll appreciate, obviously, that there's a very clear separation of powers when it comes to myself or commenting on a particular case or perhaps sentencing or what's gone on in a case. But what I have tried to do for the last number of years is make sure that, firstly, victims are protected, that they can come forward, that the supports are there for them, but that also those who are guilty of these crimes can be held accountable. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I have done in recent months, in fact, that has come into law is I have changed and increased the maximum sentence for assault causing harm, because what I've seen over the years is where I believe lenient sentences have been handed down, where I believe judges have not had enough discretion in handing down sentences, where the maximum has been 5 years. So I've doubled that from 5 years to 10 years. I've also made changes, and in the next few weeks there'll be new laws implemented to make sure that if somebody gives character references in cases, that they are willing to come forward and stand over those and to be cross-examined in
all cases.
Cases when it comes to domestic violence, sexual violence, violence against women. There are scenarios.
So would that apply in this case? If that was in place on Wednesday, would it apply in this case? Does this come under gender-based violence, this case?
It would come under this case. Mm-hmm. My understanding, but again, I suppose I want to speak more generally because I'm very conscious that this is potentially still a case. So while there has been a sentence applied here, it is the case that the DPP, for any scenario like this, can appeal a case. It is open to the DPP if she feels that a sentence has not been strong enough or a sentence is too lenient, that she can then appeal it, or the DPP, whoever that is, can appeal it. And it's really important that that avenue is available as well. But for me, it's about making sure my role as Minister for Justice is making sure that the maximum sentence is there, that it's strong enough, that supports for victims are there, that we encourage people to come forward, and women in particular. We've only seen this week with the Women's Aid report, while it is absolutely harrowing, and I think it just really shows the epidemic that is domestic and sexual violence in this country, more women are coming forward, and we need that to continue to be the case, because we need this to be something that we're talking about, that we're responding to, that we're supporting victims in particular in any of these types of scenarios, and that it's not something that's hidden away as it has been for so many years.
But this case might just be disheartening for those people who have come forward, because, you know, Natasha has put herself out there, said what she's had to say, gone into court, faced the judge, faced her attacker, and she comes out feeling that justice hasn't been done.
And look, I cannot commend her enough for what she has done and the bravery that she has shown. It is always open to the DPP to appeal a sentence. And I suppose I say that broadly. And it's not that I'm shying away from your questions. I just want to be very careful.
Yeah.
This is still an open case.
I'm
very conscious
that.
Of the separation here. But,
okay,
but it is so, so important that we support victims and that we encourage them to do what Natasha has done, as difficult as it has been. And that it's important to acknowledge somebody has been found guilty here. There has been a prosecution. There has been a conviction for this brutal and vicious and unprovoked assault on a young woman who was simply walking down the road, which shouldn't have happened.
You mentioned these new rules that are coming in relation to character references. And we had that in this case, where we had an officer of the Defence Forces telling the court during the sentencing hearing that the attacker was an exemplary, courteous, professional and disciplined soldier. Do you think the man who carried out this attack on Natasha O'Brien is fit to be a member of the Defence Forces?
do you know, I think if any person is willing to stand up in court to give a character reference, they should be willing to stand over it. They should be willing to be cross-examined, which is exactly what this law will do. And this is exactly what these changes are for. And it's about making sure that victims particularly, and this is where you have a conviction. So this is not in the middle of a trial where obviously you have somebody defending themselves, but where somebody has been found guilty and there is a sentencing. If somebody is willing to stand up knowing that someone has been found guilty, they should be in a position that they can be cross-examined and that they should be able to stand over what they're saying. And I say that broadly for any specific case.
And that will happen in a couple of weeks, are you saying that?
The law will be changed in a matter of weeks. So we have 3 weeks left before the Dáil term concludes. And I expect that the sexual offences legislation that I've been working on and working with my colleagues, James Brown, that will be enacted before the end of the recess.
And can you answer that question about whether this person should be in the Defence Forces?
That's really not a matter for me, Claire. And again, I'm very conscious that this is still a live case because of the fact that the DPP can take an appeal. So I don't want to say anything here that could prejudice this. But, you know, a person has been found guilty of what was a vicious and unprovoked attack. And I think people, I hope, will take solace in that. And I understand that there are other questions to be asked here, but my job is to make sure that there is a maximum sentence there. And over the last number of years, what I have seen consistently, where you have assaults that have taken place, sentences have not seemed strong enough. And so that's why I've doubled the sentence from 5 years to 10 years, giving greater discretion to the judges who are hearing the cases.
But it's then the discretion that people have the questions about, particularly in relation to this case. And I understand you can't go further than that.
And that is why the DPP has the opportunity to make an appeal. So that is there and that option is available. And obviously that's a decision for the DPP to make. But that is there and it's very important that that is there as well.
I just want to make it clear the case we're discussing, it comes under the heading of gender-based violence. That's why that rule might apply if it was happening in a couple of weeks' time, where the character reference referee could be questioned.
Yes.
It is not a domestic or sexual abuse case.
No, this happened out on the street in the open where someone was attacked unprovoked, which is an appalling thing to happen to anybody.
Sarah Benson from Women's Aid said the case tells us we're not in a good place when it comes to the perpetration of violence against women. Is that fair?
I think we've a long way to go. And I mean, I work very closely with Sarah, as I do with many of the organisations who've spent years working with women. I think we're in a much better space than we were. And again, I reference the fact that Women's Aid last year saw more women than ever before seeking their help. And I think we have to look at the positives of that. I don't think that it's suddenly, you know, the number of women that are being assaulted and violently assaulted in their homes or elsewhere has increased that much in a year. I think it's that more women are coming forward because we're talking about it, because we now have a whole of government strategy that says everybody has a responsibility to deal with this issue, because we're talking about changing behaviours more broadly, because we're talking about engaging with young people at the earliest stage to say that this type of behaviour and action is not to be tolerated. It's not that long ago that people said, well, that's a domestic, that's in somebody's home, we don't have anything to do with that. So I think we're much better than we were, and we're in a much better place than we were only a few years ago. But we have a long way to go. This is an epidemic. I really believe that. I think if the amount of people, if what we saw, what happened to Natasha, was happening at the same rate as we know it's happening in people's homes, there wouldn't be a day that we weren't talking about this. But because it's behind closed doors, because it's in people's homes, there's still a reluctance to talk about it in the way that we should. But I think we need to keep at it. I will do everything that I can. My colleagues will do what they can. The work that the organisations like Women's Aid and others are doing is really, really important. But everybody has a role to play here. And it's about making sure that women feel confident, because it is unfortunately still women who are mainly the victims here, that women feel confident in coming forward, that they know they'll get the support and that there'll be justice at the end of the day.
OK, and another case which we heard about this week, highlighted by your party colleague, Senator Barry Ward, was this instance where we had the report of three gay men in the Phoenix Park being chased by people who were carrying knives simply because of their sexuality. And you could argue that feeds into the narrative that took hold after the Dublin riots that the streets aren't safe. What do you say?
I think I've always said that there are issues that we need to deal with. It's a city of over a million people. There are always going to be issues. And that's why I'm doing so much of the work that I'm doing. That's why so much of my focus is making sure we've more Gardaí. we need more than we have. And I've done everything from, you know, the end of this term now. Again, we'll increase the age that Gardaí can retire so that we can keep more of them, changing the age at which they can join, making sure they have more support when they're there so that we have that visibility. But also, how can we do more to support Gardaí in their work? So the introduction of body-worn cameras. Only in the last 3 weeks, we now have Gardaí in Dublin City Centre wearing body cameras. Mm-hmm. And already that's been reflected in the courts where they can use it as evidence. This particular incident, we know that there was CCTV. So I've changed the law to make sure that communities can put in place more CCTV. So if issues like this arise or incidents like this arise, that there will be more evidence for the Gardaí to work on.
Well, there's a group called Outhouse and they advocate for LGBT plus rights, and they want to see the hate crime legislation passed as a matter of urgency. And that call has been made in the wake of that incident at the weekend. Where is that at now?
So I think, as most people will be aware, the legislation had gone through various different stages in the Houses, and concerns were raised at a certain point, mainly around the hate speech or the incitement to hatred side of it. And what I have done, and I'm doing as I do with every legislation, is taking on board those concerns. I want to see it enacted. I'll be very clear, I want to see it enacted, but I also want to make sure that we get it right and that I take on board those concerns. It's very clear, and there's evidence from the Gardaí, that hate crimes are on the increase. We know that people are being attacked simply because of who they are, not just their sexuality, but potentially the colour of their skin, where they've come from, their religious background. And we need to be very clear that that's not going to be tolerated, and that that's an aggravating factor in a crime. And that's exactly what the hate crime legislation does.
So will it be passed before the general election?
My intention is that it would be passed
but
in this
be
term.
But it'll be an amended term. Version of what was there originally.
It will be. And look, that's because I'm taking into consideration concerns that people have raised. I want to get this right, but I also want this legislation passed. It is not tolerable that people would be attacked or targeted simply because of who they are, because of their sexuality, the colour of their skin. But unfortunately, these types of crimes are on the rise. We know that from the statistics that the Gardaí gathered themselves. They published them only in the last few months. So we need to be able to respond. And that's exactly what I'll do.
I want to move on to immigration, because it was a really hot topic over the local and European election campaigns. Simon Harris, when he came into office, it seemed that we discovered all of these levers that we can pull, new measures announced almost daily to control the numbers who are coming in and the numbers who are allowed to stay. And all that serves to do is to show us that you weren't in control when you could have been, that there were options there that you weren't taking.
Well, firstly, any of the measures that I've announced or brought forward in the last few weeks are measures that have been in train for the last number of months, or indeed since last year. I suppose to take a step back, I mean, we're at a time where there are more people on the move than there have been since World War II. It's a very changing environment. It's a global challenge. There are conflicts happening on mainland Europe, in the Middle East, in Africa. There are people literally fleeing war, persecution, starvation. Yeah, but there are also people seeking a better life.
Yeah, and we know that. But prior to Simon Harris coming in, we were told that we have international obligations. Then he comes in and we have things like checks on the border, you know, and people, and now conversations being had about people being prosecuted when they dump their passports or they don't have passports or documentation when they come in here. Like, these are things that could have been done that weren't being done up to now.
So let's just be very clear, we don't have checks on our border on this island. We have checks at the airport, and that's always been the case. So for 2 years now...
We have Garda operations happening now, checking people who are coming through on buses from Northern Ireland. I mean, you yourself said that 80% of people coming here are taking that route in.
And that's always been the case. So that has been happening always. So we have very close cooperation between the Garda and the PSNI, and those checks have always been taking place. The checks at our airports have been taking place for the last 2 years. So for the last 2 years, I've put in place a number of measures, in particular for people coming through the ports and airports.
Are you saying nothing has changed or something has changed?
What I'm saying is, over the last 2 years, I have been working on different measures that obviously have come in at different stages and different times. So everything from the accelerated procedure, which means that people who are coming from specific safe countries, they're processed faster. That's resulted in a 50% reduction of people coming from those countries. At our ports and airports, we've had doorstop operations. So this year alone, from January to now, there's been 3,000 doorstop operations. So people getting off flights or Gardaí going onto planes, they're being checked for their documents. That's already been happening. We have liaison officers that are at other airports across Europe. That's been going on for over a year and a half now. That means people are being checked before they get on the planes. We have training that's happening with our airline staff. Again, that's been going on for almost 2 years now, making sure that the staff themselves know what to look for, how to spot the signs if somebody's potentially going to destroy or get rid of documents or even getting on with false documents. The work that the Gardaí are doing, I have been, and I've made very clear, well before, I suppose, the beginning of the year, that I am going to free up more Gardaí who are doing desktop duties at the moment to be able to do more operational work. So like checks, looking at deportation orders, how do I identify people who should be removed from the state? This is at the same time as increasing the ability for us to process faster. So if you imagine we have a system, an immigration system that was built at a time when we had on average about 3,000 and 4,000 people coming every year. It's not a huge number, but that's the system and that's what has been built mm-hmm. for. We now already this year have 10,000 people who have arrived. So I haven't sat and said, OK, well, what can we do about this? For the last 2 years, I've been ramping up the system. I've more than doubled the staff in the International Protection Office. It's enabled us to process things quicker, which has meant that we're getting a quicker turnaround time. The quicker somebody gets a positive decision, the better it is for them to move on with their lives here. But if somebody gets a negative decision, the easier it is
to remove
them.
But the narrative has developed that we have been a little bit lax here. I mean, that's what the whole conversations were around the time of the local and European elections. That's why some people got elected who may not have been at any other time. I mean, even that basic point that Michael O'Leary made during the week, that if we've no direct flights coming from those countries where people are fleeing from, why do we have those tens of thousands of applications coming through here and being accepted here?
Well, firstly, if a person arrives on our island, on our shores, we have a legal obligation, if they seek international protection, to allow them to make their case for that. We've signed up to the Geneva Convention post-World War II. Every developed country in the world has signed up to this, and we will fulfil that. So if somebody arrives here, we have an obligation to do that, and we will do that.
But they're not coming from the original country where they say they're fleeing from. That's his point, because they can't directly come from that country. They're coming from somewhere else.
They're not, and that's why the measures that I've just outlined are being put in place. So we have liaison officers in other airports.
Why wasn't that happening before now?
That has been happening. That's been happening for the last 2 years.
But we've been accepting those applications, not returning people quickly to those to the third countries where they should have made their application. We've been accepting their application here and leaving them here in some cases for years.
So I suppose this is where the pact comes in, and you're talking about returns. So we have structures in place. So it's a global problem. It's a European, not a problem, it's a challenge. We're talking about people here. We need to respond to what is a challenge. We have structures in place to deal with returns that you've mentioned. So if somebody has already applied for asylum or gone through another country and applied for asylum, they should be processed there, not in our country. The system that we have to deal with that, it's called the Dublin 3, doesn't work. It's not effective. It's overly cumbersome. It can be delayed. It can be frustrated. What the pact will do, we'll put in place a new system, a new structure. So we've been operating with what we have, what we can use at the moment. It's not effective. It doesn't work. We will move to, under the pact, a new system whereby it's much easier, much quicker to return somebody to the country that they've originally come through. But also the measures that I've put in place over the last number of years, be it liaison officers in other airports, be it the training of staff, making sure that they can identify a person or stop a person from getting onto a flight that shouldn't mm-hmm. be getting onto a flight. And that's resulted in a 40% reduction of people coming here through our airports that shouldn't be coming here. So it's not fair to say that nothing's been done. So if you have a 40% reduction of people coming, it clearly shows that we've been working on measures, but there's more we need to do, and that's what I'm doing.
You're looking at deportation flights again, isn't that right? Michael McDougall saying in the Shannon that he tried that 20 years ago and it doesn't work. So why would we be looking at it again?
Because I think it's important that we have every tool at our disposal. I'm not saying that that's the overall, that's not the one way in which we can remove people from the state, but we need to have it available to us. And I'll say why.
But it's really expensive and cumbersome, he says, and ultimately it doesn't work.
Well, if you have a large number of people who have been refused asylum from the same country at around the same time, if you have your own flight and a charter plane to be able to remove a large number of people at the same time with your own flight, it's much easier and it's much quicker than buying flights and putting them on perhaps 20 different flights.
But you're going to run into the same problems that he did. He said the deportees don't show up or they get to court, to get injunctions. And ultimately, the system is really expensive and it doesn't get you very far.
So what he's talking about is a system that we had. And I'm saying the system is changing to be a system that's more efficient and effective. So one of the challenges back when Senator McDowell would have been minister is that people are in the system for years. The longer you're in the system, the more rights you accumulate, the harder it is to remove a person if they don't have a right to be here. However, if you speed up the system, as I am now, mm-hmm. the shorter a person is in the country, the easier it is to remove them. So, for example, the accelerated procedure. So I have applied a new system to safe countries. These are countries where we say generally, and we've looked at the country, people shouldn't be seeking asylum. It's generally safe. Since that was introduced in November of 2022, we're starting to see those applications come through. And the vast majority of people are being refused. They're not here long. We know where they are in the vast majority of instances.
How do we know? Do you know where they are? Do you know whether they're here or not?
The vast majority of people are in accommodation still. But if they've been given that negative decision, we can move much more quickly. So if a person is here 3 or 4 or 5 years, they've gathered a lot more rights. They might have started working. They might have settled down. They might have a family. It's much more difficult to remove them. If a person is in the system much shorter, it's much easier to remove them. And again, this is where the pact is so important. One of the main elements of the pact is investing in faster processing. It's having newer procedures where people are turned around quicker. And so if someone has a right to be here, if they're genuinely fleeing war and persecution, that they get that right much quicker, that they can move on with their lives. But if they don't have that right, then it's much easier to remove them much more quickly. And this is, you know, the pact itself, and we've debated that this week in the Houses, and we've been discussing it for some time now. There's nothing in the pact that doesn't benefit Ireland and the structures and the systems that we have. It's about quicker turnaround times, faster processing. It's about being able to remove people quicker or return them if they don't have a right to be here. It's about having greater access to information of people who are coming into the country, so we'd have access to a European-wide database where we are sharing that information. It's about making sure we show solidarity. This is a European-wide
challenge.
And are you
confident now that...
How do we show solidarity with other countries as well?
Are you confident that your officials can keep track of the people who've had their asylum application turned down?
Absolutely, yes, because what we're talking about is making sure that we do it quickly, that people are in designated accommodation as well. So the challenge at the moment is that we are responding, you know, we are reliant on private providers. We have people who are in many different centres across the country. However, as part of the pact, there will be designated centres where people will be living, where people will be staying, where
will
people
they
will be asked. Well, that's been worked through at the moment. Minister O'Gorman brought a paper to Cabinet a number of months ago, and he's working to identify where those sites will be and how they'll be developed. But it's an important element of the pact to make sure that you have designated centres.
It's a really important part of your work, because you need those centres in order to keep track of people. So he needs to identify the locations pretty quickly for your purposes.
And he's working on that. But could I just, I suppose, point out one thing? Because we can focus on enforced deportations. And to your point earlier, they're more costly, they're more cumbersome, they're not as effective, they're hard to enforce because they require a lot of people. Whereas if you look at voluntary returns, they're much more efficient and effective. So while I've already ramped up the number of deportation letters that have been signed and in fact enforced this year already, what we're seeing is much more significant investment in voluntary returns. So if a person gets a negative decision much more quickly, if they're told you will have a deportation order if you don't accept this, to have a deportation order on you, it means that follows you everywhere you go. It follows you across Europe. Most people don't want that. Mm-hmm. So they are, and for the most part, if somebody's offered to return to the country that they've come from, they will take that up. So there's a real focus on voluntary returns and offering people the assistance, be it to just to get a flight to go back to where they've come from. And people generally take that up. So that's where there's a focus
as
well here.
Minister, we need to leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. That's the Justice Minister, Helen McEntee.
Thank you.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.